بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وافضل الصلوات وتم التسليمات على سيدنا محمد وعلى اله وصحبه اجمعين. ثم اما بعد، so we continue to read and have our sessions في الفقه المالكي من كتاب تدريب السالك الى قراءة الاقرب المسالك في مذهب الامام مالك. And we were last time left off in the chapter dealing with the prayer, the ritual prayer, and we have done tahara, and we have done some of the conditions of the prayer, including covering of the awra, or one's nakedness, and taharat al-khabath or taharat al-hadath, which means to be ritually pure and to also clear your physical body and your clothing and the place of prayer, namely where you're going to put your hands and knees down for sujood, from najasa, or that which is considered to be ritually filthy. So now we have come to the section in this book dealing with facing the qibla, which is in Arabic is called istiqbal, istiqbal al-qibla. So to put the qibla in front of you. قال المصنف رحمه الله ورضى عنا وعنكم ونفع الله بعلمه في الدارين آمين. من شروط صحة الصلاة استقبال القبلة، وهي عين الكعبة لمن بمكة وجهتها لمن كان خارج عنها. So facing the qibla for Muslims is one of the obligations, and it's also a condition of validity for the ritual prayer. It's not considered an actual obligation of the prayer, but it is an obligation nonetheless. And the way they note the difference between something that is a shart, that is a condition to something, or something that's obligatory, is you ask yourself, is it in or is it out? So is it considered from the prayer? If it's considered from the prayer, like when we get to Takbirat al-Ihram, when we say Allahu Akbar in the beginning, it's an obligation, but it is from the prayer itself. It's considered part of the prayer. So we consider that an obligation and not a condition. Whereas something that is outside of the prayer and needs to be fulfilled for the prayer to be valid, like what we're talking here, is going to be an obligatory act, but we consider it to be an obligation, or a condition of validity. So like covering one's nakedness, taharat al-hadath wal-khabath, as we mentioned, and also istiqbal al-qibla. Now, the prayer direction for Muslims is we face towards the Kaaba in Mecca. Initially, when the Prophet ﷺ was in Mecca and the prayer had become obligatory on the night of Isra' al-Mi'raj, which we just commemorated just last week or a few days ago, the prayer direction was in Bayt al-Maqdis, towards Bayt al-Maqdis, which is Jerusalem. So then he would have to have faced north in order to face that way. And if you stand to the south of the Kaaba, and then you have the Kaaba in front of you, and then you're facing north, you're actually facing both the Kaaba and Jerusalem. And that's what the Prophet ﷺ used to do when he was inside the Haram. But when he was outside the Haram, like when the command came down, he was masjid, what's called today Masjid al-Qiblatain, or the Mosque of the Two Qiblas, which is in Medina. When the prayer direction was changed to Mecca, then he faced towards Mecca during the prayer, actually during the prayer. Wallahu a'lam. So the Qibla then represents our, not just prayer direction, but a focal point or a focus. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we say, is munazzih an al-jihad wa an al-ahjam. And, you know, he's anything beyond that we can think of to be in a particular direction. The Quran tells us, فَإِنَّمَا تُوَلُّوا فَثَمَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ. In whichever way you turn, you will find the countenance of God. So it's not like that Allah is like, particularly in the Kaaba, hasha, that's not impossible for us to say something like that. But he made it, the Kaaba, to give us a focal point, a point of focus, by which we can have our prayer direction. So then it becomes important to figure out where this direction is. So on the first line, he says, من شروط صحة الصلاة, from amongst the conditions of validity of the prayer, is استقبال القبلة. And as we know, something that is a shart means if you fulfill it, doesn't necessarily mean the prayer or that act is valid, because you have to fulfill all of the conditions. So it's one of them. So from amongst them is استقبال القبلة, facing the قبلة. وهي عين الكعبة لمن بمكة. And it is the Kaaba itself. He says, Ayn al-Kaaba. In other words, you have to actually face the Kaaba. لِمَنْ بِمَكَّةِ For someone who is in Mecca. وَجِهَتُهَا لِمَنْ كَانَ خَارِجٍ عَنْهَا Or its direction to someone who is outside of Mecca. What does he mean by direction? In other words, you have to be within 90 degrees. One of the four directions. So if, let's assume for example, you're in Medina and you want to face the Kaaba, it's south more or less. So you have to be within 45 either way. So either you're southwest or you try to figure out southwest or you try to figure out south or you try to figure out southeast. That's the jihad. And you only have to be within that range. Not just be within that range, but that's what you try to figure out. Am I in that range or not? So it's actually relatively easy compared to some of the other schools like the Shafi'i school, which says that you have to try to determine Ayn al-Qibla. You have to try to determine what the Qibla is dead on. Not that you're going to hit it dead on, but that's the direction that you have to determine. So why the difference between Mecca and outside of Mecca? Well, the general principle in the Sharia is those things which are easy to achieve or reasonable to achieve, then we have to do them. So it's considered reasonable that if you are in Mecca, that you can face the Kaaba. Why? Well, before the modern age and before the skyscrapers and the large hotels, pretty much if you were within in the mountain, within the mountain ranges, so you weren't, you know, outside of Hira, but you were inside Mecca, you can actually see the Kaaba from wherever you are, or you can see the Haram. Certainly, if you're inside the masjid, the Haram itself, you have to hit the Kaaba, and you can't be a little bit off. Some of the books of fiqh even mention if you live in Mecca, that if you need to go to your rooftop to figure out what exactly is the direction of the Kaaba and not just the direction in general, then you should be doing that. So I say on the safe side, people are living in Mecca, or if you're a resident in Mecca, if you're going for Hajj or Umrah, then you have to determine hitting Mecca exactly. Hitting the Kaaba exactly. وَجِهَتُهَا لِمَنْ كَانَ خَارِجٍ عَنْهَا But if you're outside of Mecca, which includes Mina, which includes Arafah, which includes Muzdalifah, even though they're close by, and obviously Medina, then it's enough to hit the prayer direction itself. As I said, if it's, you know, if you're in Medina, then you're looking for something like south or thereabouts, southwest, southeast, you know, so forth. هذا لمن كان خارج عن مكة. Certain places, though, where the Sahaba or certainly the Prophet ﷺ established the Qibla, like his masjid in Medina, you don't waver from that. That's the Qibla that the Prophet ﷺ established. That's where it's going to be. Also, if you are in a place where someone that you trust has established the prayer direction, like some of the established Muslim cities like Cairo, like Damascus, like Baghdad, so forth, then you're free to go by whichever direction you're praying in the mosque. You don't have to sit there with your compass and figure out, is this mosque correct or not? If you have trust in the people who established the prayer direction. And certainly, you know, I'm familiar with some of the older masajid in Cairo, that's certainly the case, like Masjid Amr ibn al-As, the one that the Sahabi Amr ibn al-As established, that the Sahabi who established that. So, you know, you should go by that Qibla, even if your compass shows maybe it's not a few degrees off one way or the other. Allahu a'lam. ومن تحرى وصلى فإن تبين خطؤه بعدها أعاد في الوقت ندبا كمن نسي جهتها. So the important thing is that you determine the Qibla with whatever means you have. Let's say you're somewhere and you don't have it's not in a regular masjid, it's not a place where you know where the Qibla is, and you need to determine the prayer direction. Can you use a compass? Yes. Can you use your iPhone app? Yes. Can you use the stars? Yes. Can you use the sun? Yes. So anything that's at your disposal, even the winds. Some people know, but like, this is the north wind, this is the south wind. You can use any of those things to make your ijtihad. So the ijtihad means just trying to determine the prayer direction, whichever means that you have. Let's say you have no means. Let's say you're in a closed room. Let's say, la qadr Allah, you're in prison. And you're in a closed room and you don't have, and there's no windows. And there's no way to establish the direction of the prayer. In this case, there's two opinions in the school, in the Maliki school. One is choose any direction, because at this point, you're ajiz, you don't have the ability to figure out the direction, so then it's not required of you. The other opinion is to pray the prayer four times in the four directions. So just establish, you know, like a perpendicular, one this way, one that way, one to the, you know, one up, one down, one to the right, one to the left. And then that way you certainly hit the jiha, right, which is the direction of the prayer. But we would say more than likely you can try your best to choose one of the directions that you think is appropriate, and that's enough if you have, if you're unable to determine it. So this next line he says, "Yawman taharra wa salla." So whoever does do some of that ijtihad, taharra, yani they put an effort into it, wa salla, and then they prayed. فَنْتَبَيَّنَ خَطَأُ بَعْدَهَا عَادَ فِي الْوَقْتِ نَدْبَنَّ. So someone who did that, and then afterwards they said, oh, wait a minute, that was wrong. I actually, the prayer direction was south, and I was kind of facing north. What do they do? عَادَ فِي الْوَقْتِ نَدْبَنَّ. They can repeat the prayer, نَدْبَنَّ, within the time, within الوقت الاختياري. So they, in the preferred time, they can repeat the prayer. Nadban means they don't have to. Why? Because they already, yani, bathulul wasa'ah, they did what they could do initially in determining the prayer time, and that's all that's required of them. Afterwards, if they had made a mistake, then they can repeat the prayer, but they don't have to repeat it. Kaman nasiya jihataha. Same thing for someone who knows which prayer direction it is, but then for whatever reason, you know, they are in their hotel room and they, you know, they had determined already and then they actually prayed in another direction. They forgot. This one also can repeat the prayer, nadban, you know, within the prayer time. وَإِن تَبَيَّنَ خَطَأُهُ فِي حَالِ الصَّلَاةِ فَالْأَعْمَى وَالْمُنْحَرِفُ يَسِيرًا يَعْتَدِلَانِ إِلَيْهَا وَيُتِمَّانِ وَالْبَصِيرُ الْمُنْحَرِفُ كَثِيرًا يَبْتَدِئُهَا. So here is another issue. Let's say, let's say you're in the prayer and you're praying, like, wait a minute, it's not right. What do you do? It depends on your situation. So, al-a'ma wal-munharifu yasiran are in the same category. So someone who is blind, right, and maybe someone told him pray this way and he just went that way, and then the person who told him pray this way said, oh wait, it's wrong. So that's one category, someone who's blind. وَالْمُنْحَرِفُ يَسِيرًا, and the one who is not blind but is off by a little bit. What's a little bit? 80 degrees or less, because we said 90 degrees is the allowable difference, you know, because you're trying to determine the direction. So if you're off by 90 degrees plus, then you're not al-munharif yasiran, you're al-munharifu kathiran. That means you're way off. So the one who's off by a little bit, or the blind person, then they can just change the direction while they're praying. And they need not make up what came before. So if they're reading the Fatiha, or they did the first rak'ah, then they go for the second rak'ah, and they say, wait a minute, I'm off by 60 degrees from the jiha, from the direction. Then they can just turn in that way, and it's okay. Or if there's someone who is blind and someone put them that way, they can, you know, they can tell them, even just move to your left a little bit because the prayer direction is off. أما المنحرف كثيرا والبصير عفوا البصير المنحرف كثيرا. So the one who is able-sighted can see, and they're off by 90 degrees plus, they have to start over if this is inside the prayer. Because, you know, they made a mistake that's too big. This is while they're in the prayer. If they already finished the prayer, then we go back to the one before it, where they can repeat within the time. But while they're still inside the prayer, then they have to start over. So that brings us to the question of what is the prayer direction for someone who is on the other side, or, you know, at least half a world away from Mecca, which people discuss often. So in North America, for example, where we are right now, which direction should I face towards Mecca? Should it be northeast, which would be the shortest route, which is the Great Circle route, which is what planes take to get to Mecca, or to fly anywhere that's, you know, south of the equator on, to the east? Or would it be just looking at it from a geographic sort of geometric southeast? Which one? Which would be longer route, but in terms of simple geometry, it's the one that seems the one that's more direct. This faqir, Allahu a'lam, I think whichever one you follow is okay. There's ijtihad for this one, and there's ijtihad for this one. There's evidence for this one, and there's evidence for that one. So I prefer not to make a big issue out of it, and whichever one that you're comfortable with is best. So, you know, most masajid in North America actually face northeast. I personally, I wouldn't make an issue out of it. If that's the way they pray, I would rather play with a jama'ah. And to me, it's a reasonable ijtihad. It's not something that's completely off or wrong. And if I found myself in a masjid or in a place where they're praying southeast, I'll pray southeast with them. And so forth. And we consider it just to be qawlan. And you find that often in the madhab. You find within a particular school two opinions about a certain issue. And we'll see that, you know, moving forward. Actually, we went over one, the idea of taharat al-khabath. Is it a wajib or is it a sunnah? Is it obligatory to remove impure filth from your body and your person and your clothing, or is it something that's merely sunnah? There's two dominant opinions in the school. So the more precautious one would be to remove it and consider it an obligation, and the less precautious one would be to, you know, if you're stuck, then you can follow the opinion that's sunnah if you can't remove it, so forth. So that's our opinion, Allahu a'lam. That whichever one you choose, and I would also base my choice depending upon if I'm with a group, whatever the group is doing, and it's always better to go with the group, as long as whatever they're choosing to do is within the realm of that which is reasonable or halal or not haram in another school of thought. So I would also extend that even to someone, as we will go later on, we'll talk about Salat al-Safar, which is the shortening of the prayer and the combining of the prayer. We will get to the Malikis. They don't really combine prayers during travel except when they're kind of en route. Once they reach their destination, even if it's a temporary destination, in other words, they're not a resident there, they're going to be there less than 4 days or 20 prayers, then they should not be combining, even though the Shafi'i school allow them to combine. If I'm with a group and they're Shafi'i, or they're following a Shafi'i opinion and they're combining, I'm not going to sit in a corner by myself and watch them pray. I will pray with them. If I want to pray my asr later on, because I combine with them and I do it by myself, good too, right? Because I have the jama'ah, and then if I feel so strongly about it, I want to do it properly on my madhab, then it's okay also to pray it by yourself after. So, alhamdulillah, the deen has wusa, and I think also we should use some hikmah and wisdom and consider, you know, the idea of jama'ah, and let's call it group dynamics, and wahda, you know, to be unified on things when there is room for us to do so, I think is also min al-hikmah, from wisdom and from the fiqh as well, Allah. So then the author here, he just gives some examples in Mecca. He said, وَعَلَمَ أَنَّكَ إِذَا كَانَتْ الْكَعْبَةُ عَنْدَكَ مَثَلًا فِي الْمَغِيبِ فَانْحِرَافُكَ يَمِينًا إِلَى قُرْبِ الْعَيُّوقِ أَوْ يَسَارًا إِلَى قُرْبِ الْعَقْرَبِ مِنَ الْيَسِيرِ. He's just describing what is inhiraf if you're in Mecca or just outside of Mecca, which is too much. So we don't need to really talk about that. We've discussed it. Then he says, Rahimahullah, وَمَنْ سَفَرُهُ سَفَرُ قَصْرٍ لَهُ التَّنَفُّلُ وَإِنْ بِوِتْرٍ عَلَى الدَّابَةِ لِجِهَةِ سَفَرِ إِنْ لَمْ يَكُنْ رَاكِبًا إِلَى جَنْبٍ أَوْ خَلْفٍ وَإِنْ يُومِئْ بِالسُّجُودِ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ وَرَاكِبُ السَّفِينَةِ يَدُورُ مَعَهَا إِنْ أَمْكَنَ وَإِلَّا أَتَمَّهَا وَالْخَائِفُ يُصَلِّيهَا بِحَسَبِ الْإِمْكَانِ كَالْعَاجِزِ. So here this section is talking about traveling on a vehicle or on top of something. So in pre-modern books, we're talking about two forms here. It's either you're on an animal or you're in a boat. And generally speaking, we use the boat analogy when we talk about being in a plane or in a train. And I would say for the most part, car, but we might actually find sometimes where the car is similar to the dabba, or the animal, which I'm going to talk about in a second. But let's look at the original issue, the original mas'ala, as they talked about it in pre-modern times. وَمَنْ سَفَرُهُ سَفَرُ قَصْرٍ لَهُ التَّنَفُّلُ. So someone who is traveling قَصْر, which means they're traveling at the distance of قَصْر, which is the travel distance, which we'll get to later on, which is about 48 miles, English miles. لَهُ التَّنَفُّلُ وَإِنْ بِوِتْرٍ. So if you are praying a prayer that's not an obligatory prayer, then without condition, this is important, without condition, then you may pray on top of your dabba. Here, dabba means your camel, your horse. لِجِهَةِ safari, in the direction of your travel. So if I'm traveling from Mecca to Yemen, and that's south on my animal, I need not turn my animal around to face back towards north, to face towards Mecca, in order for me to pray witr prayer or any sunnah prayer. I can still remain jihad as-safar, which means the direction of the travel itself, and it's okay to do that. So in other words, if you're traveling and you're doing a legal travel and you're on top of an animal, then facing the qibla is not a condition. You're allowed to face the direction of your travel. If your direction of your travel and the qibla happen to be the same thing, great. But you're allowed to face the direction of your travel. And you shouldn't face another direction. So if you're traveling in that direction, so it's in other words, you can't stop or you don't want to stop, then it's okay to pray and face the direction of your travel. إِلْ لَمْ يَكُنْ رَاكِبًا إِلَى جَنْبٍ أَوْ خَلْفٍ. And that's what he means by here. So if you're not, you know, someone is riding, is up front with the horse and you're kind of like sitting sideways or you're facing towards the back, then you should not pray that way. Because the dispensation is because you're in that direction of travel. However, the exception then, let's say Mecca is north and you're traveling south and then your partner behind you is facing towards the Qibla because he has like his back to you, then they can face that way because it happens to be direction of prayer. But any other direction would be invalid. So either direction of your prayer means you're facing towards it, either you're a passenger or you're the one who's steering the animal, or the direction of the prayer. There's no other direction that's going to be allowed. So he's just reiterating that only the direction of prayer is allowed. When يُمِئُ بِالسُّجُودِ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ. And since you're sitting down, you don't have to stand up and do qiyam and all of the other integrals of the prayer. It's enough for you to indicate what's called an imat. Yani if I'm sitting, let's say I'm sitting cross-legged, then I can, you know, yumi, yani just bend towards a direction, like in ruku'ah, in sujood, so forth. I don't have to actually do sujood and ruku'ah because I cannot when I'm on top of the mount. That's in terms of someone riding an animal. Let's go to the other one, which is the boat, and then we'll talk about modern day travel. وَرَكُبُ السَّفِينَةِ يَدُورُ مَعَهَا إِنْ أَمْكَنَ وَإِلَّا أَتَمَّهَا. Someone who is on a boat then has to face the Qibla. Why? Because you can actually stand on a boat. That's the assumption here. And you can move around on a boat. So that means if the boat is not going in the direction of the Qibla, then you should face the direction of the Qibla. So if the boat is heading, you know, let's say down the Nile River, and you're trying to face east, let's say you're up a little bit north of Luxor or something, or in Cairo, or then you're going to face a little bit of southeast, then you want to face southeast on the boat, towards the left bank of the Nile. But if the boat turns, right, it's turning around, or it's turning direction, then you have to turn with it in order to maintain the prayer direction. وَالْخَائِفُ يُصَلِّيهَا بِحَسَبِ الْإِمْكَانِ كَالْعَاجِزِ. So then the third question then is the khaif and the ajiz. So the one who's afraid or the one who's unable. So the one who's afraid, for example, here he's talking both about the the one who is traveling or the one who's praying a fard or praying a sunnah. So let's say I'm on my animal and I need to pray the fard prayer. But I'm traveling in an area that's known for hyenas or lions or something like that. So me getting down off my animal is going to put me in danger, or to stop moving is going to put me in danger. Then in this case, I'm allowed to even pray the fard prayer, not just the nefilah, not just the sunnah prayer, but the fard prayer on top of the animal and face the direction of travel. Or if around me there's like the ground is like quicksand or swampy or very muddy and water, and if I get down, my, you know, I'll get all my clothes will be, you know, sort of very filthy and so forth, or it'll be difficult for the animal to stop and start again. So whatever reason where stopping would be difficult and getting down on praying on the ground would be difficult, then in this case I have the rukhsa to pray even the fard on top of the animal, if I can. So how does that relate to modern travel? Let's look at the airplane first. So usually the airplane, we're going to compare it to the boat. So that means I have to consider, do I have the ability to stand on the plane, and do I have enough space somewhere to make ruku and sujood? This, alhamdulillah, or whatever, I travel a lot, and I've been in situations where I've been able to pray standing up and go into qiyam and ruku and sujood, and I've been on situations where I was not able to do that. So I would say it would depend pretty much on your situation. When is it going to be easier to do that? Sometimes, if it's a large plane and the airline kind of has, especially if it's an international airline that's coming from a Muslim country, it's easier to kind of pray in a plane like that than not. But not always the case. So I have flown on planes that are the national carriers for Muslim majority countries, and they're not always very cooperative in terms of being able to pray standing up. Because if you look at it from their point of view, if they have like 250 passengers and all of them want to pray standing up somewhere, it would kind of be very difficult to do. Some national carriers actually set aside a space that they take out two rows of chairs, and they actually have a designated space for one to pray. So if you're lucky to have that, then problem solved. If that's the case, then usually they have on their screen the direction of the qibla, so you want to try to, and planes don't change direction that much, so you're fairly safe in just determining the prayer direction and then praying that way and then for the length of your prayer to do that. However, let's assume you're not able to stand up, you're not able to leave your seat, or there's not enough space, or you're on like a domestic carrier in Europe or in the United States or North America where people might get a little bit nervous. Someone is doing something in, you know, where the bathroom is, because, or in front of the exit door especially, and you know they might call the FAA, and two F-16s are on either side of your plane, and you want all that. The deen does not tell us what ourselves in such a situation. So in this case, you can pray sitting in your seat, and whichever, you know, it's going to be in the direction of the travel, it's not going to be another direction. Then in this case, you can pray the fard in your seat if you're unable to do so otherwise. And then the prayer is inshallah tamam. It's since you did your, you know, you exercised the most that you can do in that particular situation. Wallahu a'lam. What about if you're in the car? So the train, I would say the train is like the boat also. The train, similar thing. The same rules for the plane apply to the train. So if you have a space, if you can get up, trains sometimes are easier. There's sometimes open spaces, sometimes there's not. It depends upon the type of train. Most commuter trains, that would be very, very difficult to do. So whether in a commuter train, for example, in Europe or UK or the United States, very difficult to pray on standing up in ruku. So I would say in this case, if you're going to miss the prayer, then it's okay to pray sitting in your seat in whatever direction the train is going in. What about the car, the automobile? Well, the automobile, if you're driving it, then you have a little bit more flexibility in terms of stopping and starting. So it's always better to stop at a rest stop somewhere and get out of the car and pray. That's usually the case. However, you may find yourselves rarely, or more or less frequently, depending upon your type of commute or where you travel to, where it's not, you're not able to stop the car and get out. let's say you're stuck in traffic on the freeway, like in, you know, the Beltway in Washington, D.C. area, or the 405 freeway in California, or let's say you're stuck in the Holland Tunnel, Lincoln Tunnel between New York and New Jersey, there's nowhere to get out. And you're actually in your lane, and let's say you have very little time before the next prayer comes. Let's say you're driving, and let's assume you're on wudu. What can you do? You can pray while you're in your seat. And you can still keep your eyes on the road and, you know, read Surah Al-Fatiha and do the ruku and the sujood in the direction of your travel without getting having the need to get out. And that's perfectly legitimate. I would also say if you're traveling, let's say on a part of road or something that's unfamiliar to you, and you feel for your safety if you stop, even at a rest stop where people don't know you. And maybe some of our sisters in hijab might have this feeling, or even some of our brothers as well. Then in this case, if you have a legitimate fear and you don't want to stop, then I would also say you have the excuse to pray in the car as well. But outside of that, under normal conditions, you can stop in a rest area, or you can even stop in a masjid somewhere. And I would also say if you're planning a trip, it's a good idea to also plan where your stops are going to be and where you're going to stop to pray. So it might be a good idea if you're doing like a long trip, cross-country trip, where you're going across a few states, do a little research and find out where are the points where you can stop and pray your Dhuhr and Asr together, for example, and your Maghrib and Isha together along the way. And then I would say that would be a much better solution than having to worry about praying in the car or not praying in the car. Wallahu ta'ala ala wa a'lam. وتصح النافلة في الكعبة أو الحجر لا الفرد. And it's also permissible, it's valid to pray the nafila, which is the sunnah prayer, inside the Kaaba. So if you ever find yourself inside the Kaaba, which is an honor to have that, some people have gone inside, how do you pray if you're inside the Kaaba? Which direction? Any direction. There's at least four, I think, or awamid, four pillars or more, maybe eight, inside the Kaaba, and so you can pray toward whichever pillar you want. So you don't have, because you're inside. But that's only the nafila, not the fard prayer. Aw al-hijr. Hijr is the hijr of Ismail. So if you've seen the Kaaba, it's a cubicle or a cubit, and then there's a kind of a horseshoe or semicircular kind of low-laying brick around it. So inside that part is called the hijr. So you can pray the nafila inside of that. And there's two opinions in the madhab. Do I need to face the Kaaba itself? That's one opinion, which is a stronger opinion. Or can I face in any direction? That's another opinion. Why any direction? Because the hijr used to be considered part of the Kaaba. So the original Kaaba was rectangular. And it wasn't just a cubit and square like it is now. So that would be considered like technically you're inside the Kaaba. So they would compare it then to being inside the Kaaba, the structure itself. But I think if you were in Mecca and you were to pray facing, you know, outside, people would look at you funny thinking what type, you know. So that's also something to consider. Wallahu a'lam. So that's the section about istiqbal al-qibla. And we'll be in the next section with the time that we have left about the fara'id, or the obligations of the prayer, which also goes into the sunan, that which is considered to be a practice of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, though less than an obligation, and then the mandubat, which are highly recommended acts within it. فَقَالَ مُصَنِّفُ رَحِمَهُ اللَّهُ فَصْلٌ فِي فَرَائِدِ الصَّلَاةِ وَسُنَنِهَا وَمَنْدُبَاتِهَا. This section dealing with the fard, the obligatory acts of the prayer, and the sunan, and the mandubat, the highly recommended or the recommended acts. فَرَائِدُ الصَّلَاةِ, the obligations of prayer, and niyyah, المعينة عند تكبيرة الإحرام ملاحظا ندبا الأداء أو القضاء وعدد الركعات. So the first thing is the intention. And the hadith of Umar, narrated by Sayyidina Umar on the Prophet ﷺ, إنما الأعمال بالنيات. Actions are by their intention. So anytime you have a specific act of obedience, then you need to have an intention. A specific devotional act, you need to have an intention. A specific intention. So he said, "Anniyan wa'ayyana." So specific intention, عند تكبيرة الإحرام. When you say Allahu Akbar, what does specific intention mean? It means this is Dhuhr, or this is Asr, or this is Maghrib, or this is Subah Fajr, or this is Isha. You can't just say Allahu Akbar, I'm just praying. You can do that for Ar-Rawatib, which are the recommended prayers that come before and after. But the actual obligatory prayer, you have to say, okay, I'm praying Salat al-Duhur. Do I need to say it? No, it was Salat al-Duhur. And I don't have to, but if it's easier for you to remember, then that's okay. So the important thing is that I say, when upon saying Allahu Akbar, I intend whichever specific one of the five prayers, obligatory prayers, I'm going to pray. Then he says, Mulahidha nadban. And it's recommended, though it's not a condition, to also have the additional intention, am I praying it ada or qada? Am I praying something that is within its proper time? Or is it a makeup prayer? However, if I don't have that intention at the beginning, it's still valid. Wadid al-raka'at, also the number of rak'ahs is an additional part of the intention, but nadban, something that's recommended. It's not an obligation to think about the number of rak'ahs you're going to pray. And usually most people, when I say Dhuhr, Asr, I know it's four. Maghrib, I know it's three. Isha, I know it's four. And so forth. And that means the niyyah has to come upon you saying the Takbiratul Ihram, or right before it, but not after. So if I say Allahu Akbar and I say, wait, which prayer is this? Then I know that I have to start over, because I didn't have the intention when I started out. So the first thing is the niyyah, then the next thing, takbiratul ihram wal qiyamu laha. So takbiratul ihram, ihram means entering into sanctity, entering into something that's inviolable. So in Masjid al-Haram, in Mecca, we call it that. It's called the inviolable sanctuary, right? Something where certain things are forbidden because it's sacred. That's what ihram or haram means, or the word haram. So when you say takbirat al-ihram, it's entering into the haram, so to speak. Entering into a state of sacrosanctity. So takbirat al-ihram, the only words that you're allowed to say to enter, Allahu Akbar. And you should say it like that. Allahu, so there's a dhamma on the ha, lafz of jalala, and akbar. And you should put sukun on the ra. Don't say Allahu Akbaru, say Allahu Akbar. And be careful of the mudud. Don't say Allahu Akbar. Some people do that, because when you extend that initial hamza, then that's like asking a question. So you're asking, is Allahu Akbar or is he not? La. Allahu Akbar. Don't say Wallahu Akbar. Some of the people do that too, with a waw instead of a hamza. La. Allahu Akbar. Wal qiyamu laha. And standing for Takbirat al-Ihram. So, not to be, not standing. So you don't start in a sitting position, say, Allahu Akbar, and then you stand up and start to pray. No one would do that, but let's assume that. When is there an exception? He doesn't mention it here, but he may mention it later, is if you're joining a prayer, you're a masbuq. So they already started, they started going to ruku', and then you want to join them. So you say, Allahu Akbar, and you kind of say it while you're going into the ruku'. This is forgiven. So the prayer is valid. And according to most of the medical ulama, the rak'ah counts for you too, if you made it before the imam got back standing up from the ruku'. That's the only exception. Otherwise, one has to be fully standing when they say Allahu Akbar. So he didn't mention the raising of the hands here, because that's not actually an obligation. That will come later. That's amongst al-mandubat, or something that is recommended. We're going to make a distinction here between sunnah and mandubat later, between what's sunnah, what's mandub, because the sunnah, if you miss it, or if you leave it out, or you forget it, then you may need to do sujood al-sahu, or the prostration of forgetfulness. Whereas if you leave anything of the mandubat out, you don't do anything for that. So that's important. So raising of the hands, you're never going to do sujood al-sahu for that. وَرُقُوعٌ تَقْرُبُ رَاحَتَهُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُكْبَتَيْهِ وَرَفْعٌ مِنْ الْفَاتِحَ وَالْقِيَامُ لَهَا. So we did takbirat al-ihram and standing for it, then the fatiha and also standing for it. So to recite Surah al-Fatiha. What's the recitation of Surah al-Fatiha? The minimum is your tongue is moving. So if you're saying al-Fatiha in your head, that's not reciting al-Fatiha. You have to say Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Maliki Yawmi Deen, Al-Akhirin. You have to. It could even be in a whisper. But you're still saying it. Whereas if you're kind of not really saying it, it's in your head, then that's not recitation of Fatiha. What if my pronunciation is off? Well, if you're not a native Arabic speaker, that's okay, it's forgiven. So, or if you are an Arabic speaker, but you are affected by the local dialect, so you say Sirat al-Lazina, the Ikhwan al-Masriyin, right? You should say Sirat al-Lazina, adh. The tongue has to come out. It's a dha, not a zay. Sirat al-Lazina an'amta alayhim. So while we say that's wrong and you should try to correct it, it's not going to necessarily invalidate your prayer. But you shouldn't be leading the prayer. So someone who doesn't have the ability to say it, not because of ujma. Ujma means it's not their native tongue and they can't pronounce the letters, that's different. But if someone who does have the ability to say the native, it's kind of a native language, have the ability to say the letters, but they don't because they learned it wrong, then it's better for them not to lead the prayer. So so to recite it in that way, it can't be recited in another language. You can't use a language other than Arabic. Some of the other schools may make some dispensation for this. What if you're a new Muslim, you don't have the Fatiha memorized? Then you don't have to recite it yet until you have it memorized. So what you do instead, if you're praying by yourself, then all you need to do is just stand for a moment of time that would be equivalent to how long it would take to recite Surah Al-Fatiha. So anything that you can't do, like you don't know the Fatiha, then it's okay just to stand. And you don't have to recite anything else or any type of dhikr. You could, but be careful. Don't say anything that would be an address to somebody else. So if you wanted to stand there and say seven la ilaha illallah, that's okay, or something like that. But you don't have to. It's enough just to stand for that period of time. And then it's always better that you learn it as fast as possible and that you pray with people until, you know, pray behind people as part of a group, preferably until that happens. So reciting the Fatiha and also standing for the Fatiha as well. This will be important later when we talk about someone who's unable to stand, because some people may be able to stand a little bit of time. So if someone's able to stand for the length of the Fatiha, but they can't stand after that, then they're required to stand for the length of the Fatiha, even if they have to sit down afterwards. This will come up later when we talk about Salat al-Ajiz, or the one who is unable to do all of the integrals of the prayer. So knowing that standing for the Fatiha is a separate fadl, it's an obligation of itself, in addition to the recitation of the Fatiha itself. ورقوع تقرب راحته راحته فيه من ركبتيه ورفع من. Then the ركوع, right, which is the bowing. تقرب راحته راحته, so راحته عفوا, which is the two palms. So من ركبتيه. So تقرب means ideally you're going to be able to put your hands on your knees when you go down to the bowing position. But there are many people who can't do that. So he says, taqrub. So you do your best. So if you're only able to bend your back 5 degrees, then 5 degrees it is. But you try to bring your hands as close to your knees as possible, if you're able to do that. وَرَفْعٌ مِنْهُ. And then rising up. So you go down to the ruku'a, and then the rising up also is an obligation. وَسُجُودٌ يَضَعُ فِيهِ جُزْءًا مِنْ جَبْهَتِهِ عَلَىٰ أَرْضٍ أَوْ ثَابِتٍ مُتَّصِلٍ بِهَا وَيُعِيدُ لِتَرْكِ الْأَنْفِ فِي الْوَقْتِ وَرَفْعٌ مِنْ. So a sujood, that you put your forehead on the ground, أَوْ ثَابِتٍ مُتَّصِلٍ بِهَا, or something that is connected to the ground. So it could be like a raised platform, something like that, that's okay. That is... the forehead is fard. So is the anf. So is the nose, but not as strong. The nose is highly, highly recommended. It's an obligation, but it will not invalidate the sujood. So if you happen not to do it for whatever reason, you just have your forehead, you didn't put your nose, then tu'id fil waqt, as he says. Then you repeat the prayer within the prayer time, preferably to repeat it. So you should have both the forehead and the nose on the ground, and then you have the palms, the knees, and then the toes from the back, the foot. And the toes ideally are going to face in the direction of the qibla. If you're not able to do that and you have to put your toes back like this because you can't do it, then that's okay. And you don't have to repeat the prayer or anything like that. ورفعٌ منه, and going into the sujood and then coming back up. This is رفع منه, or it's sometimes called الجلسة بين السجودين, يعني the sitting position between the two sujood. والسلام المعرف بالألف واللام من جلوس. والسلام المعرف بالألف واللام من جلوس. So and then saying السلام عليكم. That's السلام المعرف. Not سلام عليكم, as some people do. السلام عليكم. So المعرف بالألف واللام. So the one that has a definite article in front of it, ألف لام, like the. So you say السلام عليكم. The Maliki school will just say assalamu alaikum. We don't usually say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah or anything like that. Just a very simple assalamu alaikum. Min julus, while you're in the sitting position. وفي شرط نية الخروج به من الصلاة خلاف. And as for the condition of the intention, like you have an intention to leave the prayer when you say assalamu alaikum, fi khilaf. But the one that we know in Mu'tamid, you don't have to have an intention to leave the prayer. It's enough to say assalamu alaikum, and then that indicates that you've exited the prayer without a specific intention. والطمأنينة والاعتدال في الأركان. So طمأنينة means that you have to be motionless at least for a moment in each essential aspect of the prayer. So if you're in the qiyam, you have to be motionless, not moving. If you're in the ruku'ah, not moving, not like springing back and forth like a jack in the box. And if you're in sujood also, have to be motionless even for a moment. So all of that is called tuma'nina. وَالْاَعْتِدَالُ فِي الْأَرْكَانِ. Right, الْاَعْتِدَالُ فِي الْأَرْكَانِ means you're upright. So if you're qiyam, don't have your back bent unless you're unable to do that. But if you're able to do it, and then have your limbs straight when you are doing it. والترتيب بأن يقرأ الفاتحة قبل الركوع وهو قبل السجود وهكذا. And obviously the order. So you read the Fatiha before you go into ركوع. So you don't do the ركوع first and then the Fatiha. So the order that we mentioned also is an obligation. And then the next section dealing with the sunan. And we'll do that next time, inshallah. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. Allah Ta'ala A'la wa A'lam. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم وبارك الله فيكم.